Welcome to the Upshot subscriber bonus segment this week. I'm Charlie, he's Jamie. We're joined by Sarah Hokum. And Sarah was gracious enough to stick around with us. And we're going to talk a little bit about designing courses for women and what that should look like. I'll be honest, Sarah, I've thought about this, but I feel like I don't necessarily have a great grasp on the subject in terms of like, what is good teapad placement or basket placement for FPO versus MPO? And so I guess like from a general perspective, what does it take to design a course well for, you know, let's call it high level FPO competitors?
Well, I mean, it definitely takes knowledge of the distances and abilities of the current FPO field, all the way from the elite players, all the way to the, you know, all the way down to the lower end FPOs. We need to understand what they can do. And then it's all about creating holes that give score separation. In the past, when we didn't have as many options for FPO T-pads and we played all from the golds that the same that the MPO played from, we'd see a lot of holes where there wasn't scoring separation. They were all there. The hole was too far for anybody to get a birdie look, but not far enough that it was causing too many bogeys. So we see a very little spread in the scores. And so we want to avoid that by creating holes that have ability for some players to get the birdie, some players to par, still difficult enough that you're getting bogeys and double bogeys. So, I mean, that's the start of it.
When you're designing, so FPO is interesting, right? Because it's a rapidly growing division, and it's a rapidly advancing division in terms of like average skill set. How would you suggest people kind design for FPO generally without just like giving the course to people like Paige Pierce, for example? You know, look what she did at Memorial. How do you sort of like, when you have such elite talent that separates itself from that the middle of the pack, you know, how do you pick what to design for?
That's the million-dollar question. You know, we don't really have standards outside of a few sentences that you'll see in the PDGA guidelines for course design for maybe a blue-level course. That's about what we have, and it's not that much. You know, I think developing standards for what women's disc golf should look like is part of the key. And, you know, I don't know who's going to take that on, but, you know, in my understanding of talking to course designers, there's a lot of theories out there that say that a course shouldn't have par threes that only a couple people can get to. It should have par threes that the majority of the field has the ability to get to. Maybe it's so difficult that only the Paige Pierces of the world have the skill to throw to it, but having the ability, you know, straight up the distance to get to the hole, I think is really important. And, you know, we don't want to decrease the ability for the Paige Pierces of the world to use their advantage, because they work very hard to throw that far, and that should be an advantage. How many holes should it be a big advantage on? I mean, I would argue that she has advantage on every hole, regardless of the length, because she can always disc down to a slower disc, which is more controllable. In the end, even on a 300-foot hole or a 250-foot hole, she can throw her mid. I'm throwing a fairway driver. She can throw her putter. I'm throwing a mid, yada, yada. But there's a lot of ideas that say that we should, you know, just because one person or three people in the entire world have the ability to get to a hole doesn't make it an appropriate par three. You know, I hear that a lot. You know, we have a 430-foot par three. We still have those on the Pro Tour. And there are a handful of women that can get to that hole for a birdie. They don't usually get the birdie very often. You know, it's very small percentage of actually getting that birdie. But they can get there, so people will tell me when I say, hey, this isn't a good hole for us, people will tell me, wait, but Paige can get there. You know, Evelina can get there. And I say, yeah, they can. But should they be getting an advantage, that big of an advantage, on so many holes? The answer isn't out there yet. We don't know. So I think somebody delving into that part of course design would be really beneficial.
It is interesting. Like, the standard shouldn't be, can the best player on the planet reach this hole? Clearly, the standard should be a lower level than that. I don't think you would ever hear a hole on the MPO side justified by, well, you know, Garrett Gerthy can get there for the birdie look. Or you know, pick your player. Like, you should see a birdie rate that's higher than, like, one or two people on the course that day getting there when you're talking about an elite field. So, I guess a question I have is, what are some courses that stand out to you as doing a particularly good job of designing the course to be appropriate for FPO players? Because, you know, maybe we don't have a great overall sense of what the standard should be, but who's done it well that we could learn from?
That's a great question. I think, I mean, everyone seems to enjoy playing the Beast. I think that prior to this year, this year including, but I think this year they misstepped a little bit by changing the pars for the women as well. In previous years, there were three holes that were one par higher for both the men and the women, and then this year they changed those to one par lower. And even though that really didn't change the course very much, it certainly made a big difference for the women. I think the men were still getting appropriate numbers of birdies and pars and bogeys on those holes, but then the women were all over par. Like, we were a full stroke and a half over par on those three holes. So those pars should have stayed the same. But that course in general is good no matter what because of the score separation that exists on every hole. Other courses, I mean, I think Sunset Hills is a pretty good example, but it's also not a mini men's course. It's a standalone women's course that they have made, you know, they've made it to be for the women's side of the field. It's tough. I mean, the Portland Open had tried to put in women's tees last year. I think they did a pretty good job. I think it was a little bit still too long. Milo MacGyver out of the Beaver State Fling, they have not had women's tees over the years, and they have now committed to doing that for this year if we get to play that event. So I'm really interested to see how they do that. Idlewild has given us, I think they've given us a few tees that were different. Maybe not, actually. Yeah, it's few and far between. Everybody's trying, and I think that's important. It's been a topic of conversation. But even when Steve Dodge implemented women's tees years ago at Maple Hill, it was always a few holes at a time. And then, you know, in the future, as the UDIS stats came in, we would evaluate the other holes and then continue on. So it was a slow work in progress with a few holes at one time. And, you know, I haven't heard that much about it from the new Pro Tour design team, whether they're actually going to make women's tees a priority as far as, like, making sure that slow changes happen to make the courses the best. Now, I will say Maple Hill. I couldn't think of it right off the bat, but Maple Hill has done a very good job of making adjustments over the years to the women's side of the design to try to make it the best course for women that they can. And then I really applaud them for all of that. And I think that they're doing it right. They're trying things, revamping, trying new things, revamping. You know, I think with the UDIS stats, we have a great tool to evaluate the efficacy of our holes.
I'm glad you mentioned Sunset. I actually had that thought at Worlds last year too, that I was like, man, I am really glad the women are playing this course, and I'm really glad the men aren't, because it just seemed like one of those courses that was very well set up for where the skill level is. And I guess that kind of going along with, like, how do you design courses for the top or the average, it seems to me now, and this is, I thought differently in the past, I've come around to this way of thinking, that we should design for the product, right? Like, what, like, just like we look at MPO coverage and we talk about, hey, we want to do media coverage that puts out the best product out there. I used to think, hey, we need to try to keep it somewhat similar because then we can show how well the women are doing. We can show their growth over time because it's a little more comparable to the men, and you can see, like use them as a measuring stick and then sort of say, oh, this is how the game is progressing. But I think now I'm more on the side of, like, make it a great product, an entertaining and competitive product on its own. Is that kind of where you're at?
Yes, absolutely. In fact, I have, in commentary, I have tried to stop talking about how, you know, in situations where we have a hole, that the MPO is longer than the FPO, I've tried to stop saying, you know, that this is, the MPO played from back there, we're playing from up here. Because sometimes this direct comparison between the FPO and the MPO really puts the FPO at a kind of a disadvantage in their optics. You know, they having a completely separate course that isn't even on the MPO radar, I think, you know, keeping them to stop, basically to stop comparing men's and women's disc golf, I think is important.
Just allow it to exist.
Yeah, like, it is what it is in its own right. And if the public doesn't have this ammo to say, oh, but it's shorter, oh, but it's, you know, it's shorter than what the men played, you know, then I think that it gives us our own ability to just stand on our own 2 feet and show how great disc golf can be played without having this, oh, but it's just shorter, you know, or, you know, they've made it so much easier for the women or something like that. Because that's not really, we're not looking for easier by any means. We're looking for appropriate. And, yeah, I think getting away from even comparing the two. I mean, we saw last year at USDGC, we saw Paige and Kat and I think Kristen, or maybe Kat didn't play. Maybe it was just Paige and Kristen. Well, over the last few years, we've seen several of the top FPOs play USDGC. And we see they just get smashed, you know, not even close to the cash line. You know, and I think, you know, I think it's awesome that they're out there trying to do that. And I wouldn't say that it's a bad thing that they're doing that in any way. However, it does show where the top women are compared to the top men. And I don't think that that's helping the women's image as great players and great athletes.
Sure. I mean, it's just a different game. And, like, should be treated as such. That seems obvious, right? And, you know, I'm curious, do you think, this is a kind of a follow-up to a question I asked you in the main show, do you think that the USDGC should just start having a women's division and that becomes the de facto US Women's Championship? Or do you prefer the current setup with an entirely separate event that has nothing to do with USDGC?
Honestly, I would prefer both for the time being. The reason why I would love to see women at USDGC with a different course, not a different course, but a different layout on the same course.
Sure.
Is simply because that event gets so much prestige and so much media. And it's every year it just feels like, as a pro woman, an elite pro woman, it just feels like we're just being left out of the best event of the year. It's unrealistic to think that open women can get there and qualify in the qualifying day and even